Tate Chronicles now transmitting.
Welcome to the Tate Chronicles on Healthcare Now Radio. And now, here's your host, Jim Tate.
Good day, citizens of the free world, from border to border, coast to coast, and to all the ships at sea, I bring you a warm welcome. This is your correspondent, Jim Tate, and thank you for tuning in today to the Tate Chronicles. Join me as we cut through the fog that exists at the leading edge of healthcare delivery and technology. I'm really pleased. My guest today is Lee Kim. Lee is the Senior Principal, Cybersecurity and Privacy at the Healthcare Information and Management System Society, better known as HIMSS. These roles include subject matter expert, public policy professional, and analyst. She is an attorney with expertise in healthcare and intellectual law. Lee, welcome to the Tate Chronicles.
Thank you very much, Jim. I'm really glad to be here.
What I'd really like to talk about, Lee, is a few months ago, HIMSS released its cybersecurity survey for 2021. I believe it was released at the end of January, a couple of months ago, because we hear a lot of talk about cybersecurity, particularly in healthcare. And so to be able to gather some information from the folks that are out there in the field who are having to deal with this directly is important information. So the first thing I'd like to know is the survey itself, what was the methodology, the demographics of who the survey was sent to and who replied?
Sure, definitely. Thank you. So we certainly sent out information about our survey and the opportunity to respond to it last year. Of course, as we still are in the COVID-19 pandemic, this certainly was in the trenches of the COVID-19 pandemic. And that said, we primarily sent the opportunity to take the survey out to our HIMSS members. And of course, those that we know are active in healthcare cybersecurity. So we're talking about our core group of volunteers, especially those that are members of our specialty groups around healthcare cyber, but also those in allied industries such as clinicians and others who may have some kind of touch point, as well as vendors and consultants, of course, who might support the same healthcare cybersecurity efforts. But that said, I can also say that we certainly sent the survey out to colleagues and friends that are in the industry that we know of, that are active in this space as well. There are certainly a lot of people that are HIMSS members, of course, but we recognize that not everyone is. So we sent these out to them through, you know, various message boards and channels and listservs and things like that. And last but not least, of course, we sent out the survey opportunity by way of social media quite a bit to tap into our social networks as well.
And so the responses you got, were they kind of focused on hospitals and large healthcare systems? Were you able to capture some clinics and ambulatory practices?
Yes, absolutely. So in terms of the types of respondents as well, we always strive to get a balanced perspective in terms of who's responding. So it's safe to say that these are individuals with roles across the board. It could be an acute care hospital. It could be a step-down facility like long-term care. We certainly had some participants, physicians' practices, ancillary care providers, such as those that are on the non-acute side. You know, children's hospitals and otherwise. Pretty much we seek a broad range. But I think that we would be amiss to not also poll those who provide support services, such as vendors that furnish products or, you know, vendors that furnish security services of some sort like the MSSPs, as well as the consultants that are active in the space. So to put more of a fine point onto it, the qualifying questions were essentially, do you work in healthcare cybersecurity? And, you know, whether you're a full-time employee, part-time, or or brought in as needed? Do you have some touch point into either day-to-day operations or some kind of managerial oversight over that program? So that's essentially how we qualified people. But there were many, many, many others that had responded, but unfortunately, not everyone qualified. So we had to cut out the respondents that didn't have a touch point relevant to our subject here.
Sure. Is this survey done every year? Is it done on a regular basis?
Absolutely. This survey is definitely done every single year. Mm. And in fact, this is actually the 13th annual survey in a row. We did a little bit of rebranding in 2015 to call it the HIMSS Cybersecurity Survey. Mm-hmm. But before that, Jim, we had 6 annual HIMSS Security Surveys. So, you know, this is literally the 13th year, and you know, we're glad to be continuing to doing that and to be continuing the legacy and improving upon the product, of course.
But Lee, how many years have you been involved with this cybersecurity survey?
Oh, sure. Ever since I joined HIMSS, which was 2013, okay. I was pretty much involved from that inception, and I was assisting with the survey from 2013 and 2014. But then when our, you know, there was a bit of a reorg, I started to, you know, of course, take the helm as of 2015. So that's why there was a little bit of a rebranding and such. But I've been involved with it that many years, and you know, I'm happy to talk about any kind of trends as well, if that's helpful.
You know, that's the thing that I mentioned, your legacy involvement with this survey. You're right there to see what trends may occur from year to year. So going forward, I'm sure there'll be some questions about that. If not today, then at some time in the future. But that's good to know that you've been involved for that long. One of the things I ran across the survey was this phrase called a significant security incident. What's the definition of a significant security incident?
Sure. So the definition of a significant security incident is an incident that has some kind of really major impact to your organization in terms of its operations or its patient care or something where, or maybe bottom line financially. It's just something that where the impact is really, really felt. And of course, you know, I think that you hit the nail on the head there, that what one organization may deem to be a highly severe security incident to another because of their capabilities of their team and or the technology they have in place, it might not be such a, you know, high profile significant thing because they might be able to prevent that or they might be able to block and tackle it much more swiftly. So it does depend from organization to organization, but I think that there's consensus based upon the respondents that certainly a successful ransomware incident is, as an example, something dealing with you know, a significant security incident, just like something that would, for example, disrupt clinical care or would disrupt IT or business operations. Those are certainly examples.
I know there's a requirement, I believe there's a requirement, that if there's any kind of incident, whether it's a cybersecurity incident, a willful, or somebody on staff does something wrong, and patient health information is exposed in a way it shouldn't be, that must be reported. But in a broader scope, do all security incidents need to be reported? Is there anybody to, you know, any government requirement to report? Like if not just health information, but just financial information.
Sure, understood. So that was essentially the realm of both federal and state requirements as well. So when we're talking about things such as a breach of protected health information, that, of course, does need to be reported after doing a risk assessment, of course, as we all know, needs to be reported to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services as may be appropriate under that breach notification law. But what a lot of organizations tend to perhaps not think about firsthand are all the various state breach notification laws. And, you know, that really is triggered based upon, let's say you are a hospital, I'm just going to throw out hospital, but can it, it can apply to a physician practice or whoever. Mm-hmm. Let's say you're in a border state where, let's say, there are, you're right on the border, and so you frequently get foot traffic in your hospital from an adjoining state because of your geographic locale. And let's say there it just so happens that there are no other major providers around, you're basically it. Then, well, you know, let's say along the time axis you have some kind of breach. Well, you're dealing with two reporting requirements then, conceivably. You're dealing with, you know, the breach notification requirements of for patients in your state and the breach notification requirements, pardon me, for patients in that adjoining state. So it certainly is tied to, you know, where these patients are coming from. And furthermore, you know, we know, of course, here in the U.S. at least, we have many different types of breach notification statutes. Sometimes they deal with financial information. Sometimes they deal with driver's license information, you know, all kinds of different things. So I wish I could say that there's a bright line rule in terms of this kind of specific health or financial or other information needs to be reported in the event of a breach. But unfortunately, it really is the case where you need to analyze and see, does your information fall first within the meaning of what that reportable information is? Does it even need to be reported? And from a legal perspective, at least, that's the first, you know, legal step, I guess you could say, that attorneys look at. Does this fall within the statute? And if so, okay, what do I need to do and what's my timeline? But on the other hand, for non-legal reasons, an entity may wish to report an incident or a breach if it's required. Now, in terms of things that don't quite rise to the level of a breach, meaning unauthorized disclosure of information to a third party, there may be something in a contract that you have with another entity whereby you have to report, for example, breaches in, you know, 3 days or less, just to name an example that's a fairly popular time period. So if, for example, you are working with a healthcare payor, healthcare insurer of some type, and that's in your contract, you better believe that it's going to be definitely expected for you to report that incident, even if, you know, in based upon whatever information you may know within that time period, unless, of course, there's language, for example, that you can delay it due to law enforcement reasons or otherwise, which, again, is a fairly typical caveat.
To our listeners who may have just joined us, this is Jim Tate at the Tate Chronicles, and today I'm speaking with Lee Kim. Lee is the Director of Privacy and Security at the Health Information and Management Systems Society, and we're discussing the recent HIMSS Cybersecurity Survey. Let's talk a little bit, Lee, about the points of compromise. How do these incidents occur? I know some of them are can be very devastating, but it's a very low-level attack, often just an email. What are the different types of phishing or compromise that often occur?
Sure. Thanks, Jim. So in terms of compromises that occur, by and large, you're correct. It definitely is by way of phishing, you know, the vast majority of the time. It could be, of course, by way of email, like you had said. It can be, of course, through social media, if one is active on social media. It could be by way of a text message, for example. For example, someone just sent me a a text message trying to elicit information earlier in our interview, mm-hmm. You know, as a separate matter. So these things are quite prevalent, unfortunately. What I wanted to say is that, you know, that is by and large the most effective technique that people are employing, entities are employing to get into systems, because, you know, we aren't a rules-based machine where we process things 100% to the T. We are people that, can sometimes be a bit, prone to error, that,
sure,
you know, if there might be some kind of message where it might simply, we might not be able to detect that something's a little fishy or deceptive about it. That's the ploy. And that's generally, by and large, how these things can occur. Other ways in which these things can occur would be a frequent way, to be totally frank, is people that download, you know, let's say games onto their mobile phones or free applications or things like that. You know, do you necessarily know what that application is doing? And it could be, for example, siphoning up off information from your computer or your mobile phone. That does happen, if perhaps you may have downloaded a malicious application of some sort. And so that's certainly a concern, especially if your IT department isn't quite stringent in terms of what you do.
You know, talking about that really low level, broad-based phishing attacks, I guess, for lack of a better word, some are a little complicated, and they may say it's more for individuals in healthcare, but they may say, well, this is, you know, such and such a bank or company, and there's a problem, and we need you to log in and fix it, and they just capture your user ID and password. But the lowest level and most successful phishing email I've ever received is one that just said, you will not believe the picture I saw of you on the internet, and there's a link there. And if 100 people get that email, I would guess at least a third are going to click on it. Maybe not, but a lot of people are going to click on something like that because curiosity, you know. Very sophisticated focus groups, I'm sure, have designed those phishing attacks. Well, so there's different types of points of compromise, but really, what are the, is it ransom or information targets, or people looking for get social security numbers, or what is the purpose of these attacks? What are the information targets?
You know, it really does depend upon who's on the other side. And unfortunately, we're somewhat blind to that. But regardless, the breakdown of that is the following. It's still a fairly rare thing, somewhat rare, I should say, that nation state actors are getting into our systems to compromise our systems for various reasons, whether it's theft of intellectual property, or whether it's things such as wanting to reproduce certain capabilities that we may have in terms of our critical infrastructure. Those things are certainly distinctive to specific nation state actors that need not be named, but that definitely is there. To the extent that, for example, one may have a high profile celebrity, dignitary, or high ranking government official, it's safe to say that whomever is maybe trying to target our systems to get access to that information, well, the name of the game there, of course, is unfortunately elicitation. And that does happen, as, you know, unfortunately, we, political and tensions rise and fall. And so there are always these things going on. So that's sometimes the goal there. But it's safe to say that for the vast majority of things, what are these attackers after? I'd say by and large, the normal case, is going after information either to convert it into money, or that, smash and grab technique of ransomware, or as you had alluded to, the phishing emails that are designed to either shock us and get our attention. Or, there's been a little bit of variance in terms of the most popular email subjects that attackers have used. For example, when I was with the serving with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security Analytics Exchange Program as the healthcare team leader in 2018, we have a great paper called Phishing Don't Be Fooled, which is freely available to anyone, unclassified, uncaveated. And, you know, essentially the top phishing headlines there included things, of course, related to if you're an employee at an organization, there might be a phishing email concerning your pay or concerning a need to get your password because there's a need for a technical upgrade or a revision in vacation or sick time or some kind of approval, or maybe I'm just brainstorming here, but something sure. regarding an expense report. So these things, you know, that affect our bottom line and our livelihood are very, tend to be very effective. Back then, though, and I'm sure that you've seen this yourself and, you know, you've seen the news. Several years ago, there were a flood of emails that would say, you're expecting a shipment with a tracking number. Correct. And of course, that tracking number would go to a malicious link. And now I think the fishers out there know through their campaigns that there's less of a successful click-through rate because we're much more educated and attuned to that. But instead, you know, things that you described, such as those that are, you know, that try to shock us, that try to cause fear in us, that try to get us to react viscerally instead of taking the time to do a little bit of surgical pause and say, that's not quite right. It's, you know, I'm a little bit suspicious of this. You know, it's, you know, these attackers know, you know, essentially how to, perhaps, deceive us based upon their, you know, perceived, observations of our own behavior. Mm-hmm. And of course, they'll likely keep track of those that continue to fall prey to phishing emails. So that's a concern too for those that have security awareness programs. They need to track those repeat offenders, of course, and the repeat offenders may potentially have some, you know, if they aren't executives, they might have some pretty big privileges at the organization, like cutting checks, for example.
Sure.
So we need to be very careful.
Well, the crimes around cybersecurity are potentially very high reward crimes, and they can be done from anywhere in the world. And so there is, obviously, this is something that's not going to go away anytime soon.
Absolutely. It's not. If anything, there was a report published by U.S. government that spoke of, you know, essentially the findings of the intel analysts were that there would be more chaos, more crime, you know, more of the, let's just say the bad things that happen in the world. Unfortunately, that report was published, I'd say, about a few years ago. But boy, after that report was published, within a year, things definitely started to go south. So I have to say that, unfortunately, cybercrime will definitely be on the rise, especially since, you know, and of course, this is not a license for people to hack or anything like that. And I'm not encouraging that at all. But unfortunately, the prosecution rates for cyber criminals sometimes tend not to be very, very high. So there are those that are maybe willing to take the risk, and maybe they're acting from jurisdictions where cybercrime may not necessarily be outlawed, or where law enforcement may look the other way, depending upon who you might be trying to compromise. So that's unfortunate, but that just simply means that we need to share information more and help each other out more in a mutual aid kind of way in the cyber realm.
You know, I can't believe it, Lee, but we're almost totally out of time, and a lot of the subjects I wanted to touch on we're not going to be able to do today. So I want to let folks know how to download the HIMSS Cybersecurity Survey for 2021. Really, there I recommend anybody who's interested in this topic to read it, because it really has information about the biggest concerns that folks have out there, one of which is the budgeting for cybersecurity. But some of the potential security controls, there are just a lot of things that we haven't been able to touch on. We just really hit some of the very highest points. So I think probably the easiest way for folks to locate that, correct me if I'm wrong, Lee, but just Google HIMSS Healthcare Cybersecurity Survey 2021, and that should take you right down to the link where you can download that.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And actually, just very recently, we set up a shortened URL to that at himss.org/cybersurvey. That's one word. They'll take you right to it. And in fact, from here on out, it'll take you to the most recent version.
Oh, that's great. Well, to our audience, thanks for joining me on this episode of the Take Chronicles. I offer a special salute to my guest. It's the second time she's been with me. So appreciative. Thanks, Lee Kim of HIMSS, for coming aboard today.
Thank you, Jim.
You can find more information on this show's program page at healthcarenowradio.com. That's healthcarenowradio.com. Until we meet again, here's wishing you smooth sailing and safe harbors.
Tate Chronicles transmission ending now.